This is Crucial Tech, a podcast about the technology that affects us all, but few of us understand, presented in a format that can give you some basic understanding in the time it takes to drive for the grocery store. I'm Luke Hevey, an independent journalist who's been writing about various technologies ranging from renewable energy to digital security for more than 40 years. I probably know more about it than you do, and if I don't, I will introduce you to those who do. In this episode of Crucial Tech, we're going to be taking a look at the area of digital certificates, and there are quite a few other buzzwords that are thrown in here that I think this is going to be a good teaching moment. The interview is with Alan Grau, the CTO of the Icon Labs division of Sectigo. Icon Labs was a private company that was recently bought by Sectigo, which is a large security company, and we've got another interview about them coming up maybe next week. But in this case, we're talking about some of the important issues about securing Internet of Things devices. Alan Grau's company, their specific focus is on industrial IoT, that's industrial Internet of Things, and automotive IoT. And that's solely where they're focused, and we'll talk about that. But he mentions a lot of things. Number one, he talks about some of the things they do. They do a secure boot. What that means is that when you're booting up your device and after you've just done an update of the software, if somebody's been messing with it, the secure boot system will just brick your device if it's done correctly and they don't have the right certificates, which we'll get into. And that's an important thing to protect your data. Unfortunately, it kills your whatever device it is you're using. And that exists in pretty much anything that's a digital device. It could be a server, a desktop computer, a laptop, or a handheld device. So that's what a secure boot is. There is encryption, which means they're going to take whatever it is you've created, and they're going to encrypt it so people can't get into it. Most stuff on the web today is encrypted in what they call in motion. That means from the machine that it comes from, between the machine it comes from to the machine it goes to, it's encrypted. So if somebody grabs it online, they're going to have to find a way to decrypt it. Unfortunately, for most devices, that means that the two end devices, the endpoints, are not encrypted. And what Alan's company does is it does encrypt at rest and in motion. We'll talk a little bit about botnets. Botnets you've probably heard about. They were used a lot in the 2016 campaign. What it is, it's a piece of malware that comes in either an email or something you download, and it goes into your machine, and it essentially turns your machine into a zombie that they can control. Now, sometimes it's for nefarious purposes. Well, it's always for nefarious purposes, but sometimes it's a little bit less harmful. People who are doing cryptocurrency mining will use botnets to get a hold of other people's compute resources so they can continue to do it. In some cases, it's done with permission. In most cases, it isn't. And what it does is it allows that person who's installed the botnet to use your machine to hide what it is he's doing. DDoS attack, that's a distributed denial of service, which is what a lot of these botnets are actually set up to do, because once they've been installed in multiple computers or multiple systems, then they can actually stop those systems from working altogether. And we're also going to be talking about the issue of this guy called the Janitor, which created a piece of malware that took over a device that was not properly secured and bricked it. He was doing it for what he considers to be a good reason, but it can also be used for nefarious purposes, which we will talk about. And the last thing I wanted to mention was certificates. Now, in cryptography, a certificate authority or certification authority is an entity that issues a digital certificate which certifies the ownership of a public key by the named subject of the certificate. In other words, you'll see this sometimes when it says, do you want to accept certificates? It's generally a good thing because that way you can find out where the stuff is coming from. This allows others, relying parties to some extent, to rely upon signatures or assertions made by about the private key that corresponds to the certified public key. And that's just to protect you. And there are lots of companies that do this. Sectigo is actually the largest company that provides certificates. Now, why is this important? Well, there was a recent news story that came out today. I think we've all heard of Huawei in China and how it's been banned. Their technology has been banned in the U.S. and companies have been banned from doing business with Huawei because there are some real questionable practices within that company about whether the products they deliver, and the most important one is 5G, which will speed up our mobile platforms. Once that's been put into place, if those systems have been breached by a hostile government, and in this case, the government is China, then it makes it possible for them to spy on everyone. And that's not necessarily a good thing. And so there's this big competition in the world right now to deliver 5G infrastructure. And the other one of the other big companies participating in that is our own company, Cisco. And what has been discovered is that, and Cisco is working on fixing this, so I'll just say that, but they've discovered a lot of Huawei certificates that essentially gives people within the Huawei ecosystem access to Cisco devices. That's not good, and that's why having a company issue the certificates that are not part of a, or they're third parties, is probably a bad idea. So those are your lessons for today. Now we're going to go to the interview with Alan Grau about deeper issues in that area. Hi, Alan. It's been a long time.
How are you doing, Lou? It's been a while.
Yeah, so you've got some news about, I wanted to say this about Icon Labs, is that you were the guys that kind of got me interested in the whole area of digital security. I'm kind of glad to be able to make this reconnect with you after several years. So
yeah, no, that's good to hear. I certainly spent a lot of time talking to people and beating the drum. And, you know, it has changed over the years, right? I have this really, really sharp memory of talking to a pretty high level of executive at a company that makes equipment that goes into critical infrastructure. I mean, we're talking like oil and gas rig production type stuff. And, you know, he said, well, I understand what you guys are doing and all this about security, but what's my ROI for security? And because I've got all this other stuff that I need to do. And I don't see where I'm going to make money on security. So, you know, when I can see an ROI, then we can talk. And, you know, that was probably 5 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. I had a conversation probably last Friday, with a company that's making, it's not the same company, but, they're basically saying, look, we produce sensors and control equipment that go into similar type environments, right? Oil refineries, big chemical productions. And, you know, he's saying we've got people out riding around on bicycles to check gauges and stuff. And we're making that all networked now. So, but we're a premium product. We sell for a premium price and we really care about our brand. We can't have these devices being hacked into. We can't be showing up on the news. So security is at the top of our list, right? So, the conversations I'm having now versus what I had 5 years ago really have changed.
Which is about when you and I first hooked up, was about 5 years ago.
Yeah, no, that definitely, that makes sense. You know, and so that's really, really encouraging. And in fact, I know that the company that I alluded to in my original conversation, I have had conversations with them much more recently, and their, you know, view on security is only about the ROI, right, has changed. It's a necessary component, if you want to try to be a serious player, especially in areas like critical infrastructure and smart grid and things like that.
Yeah. So I've got a few questions for you, a few issues that are popping up here. But first of all, let's let people know what it is that Icon Labs actually does.
Yeah, so Icon Labs provides security solutions for embedded devices. So, you know, any device that's not a PC, right, that is a headless device running usually in a constrained environment, although some of them are actually fairly powerful, they still need security solutions, much like you'd have on a cloud-based server or a desktop. They need secure boot. They need to be able to encrypt data at rest and in motion. They need to be able to update firmware securely. They need to be able to have a firewall so they can detect and block network-based attacks. We provide those sorts of solutions for embedded devices.
Okay. Now, do those go actually onto the device themselves, or are they on the server that they connect to?
Yep. No. So that's one of the key things in our approach has always been that you have to protect the device itself. These capabilities have to be built into the device. And so that's what we've been focused on creating.
Okay. And it's been several years since we talked. How deep have you gotten into it? I mean, do I know if I have your technology on my iPhone, for example?
Our market focus has been more on, industrial and automotive in those spaces than kind of the consumer type devices. So, I mean, Apple is certainly, they're one company that I think has done an outstanding job of building security into their devices. But, you know, that level, same level of security needs to be built into, you know, every device that's being built and is a connected device. The challenge is, you know, Apple's got tremendous resources, right? They can put a team together to build security into their devices, and can build the expertise out to do that. But there aren't really that many people that really understand embedded security, so it's hard to find those resources, and most companies can't afford to make that investment themselves. So they need to find a partner to provide those solutions, and that's what we're about.
Okay, you mentioned automotive. Is your technology in any automotive products?
Yes. So
can you talk about them?
Not by name, unfortunately, but we can certainly. There's actually several use cases that are interesting. One is in the automotive space, where there's a number of vehicle manufacturers who have recognized that cars require much greater levels of security. Right, we've seen real live attacks in the automotive space. So we've got an embedded firewall solution that's been deployed in multiple vehicle systems to ensure that, you know, communication to and from the vehicle is secured and protected. You know, you can detect if some new device tries to start connecting to the vehicle, and can block some common internet-based attacks. We've also have that solution in more than one system in the aerospace industry. So, there have been reports of people hacking from the plane's infotainment system, Wi-Fi, into the control network on a vehicle.
Yes.
And, there's actually one guy that famously blogged about issuing climb commands to the control system in the plane in the middle of a flight, and later spent some quality time with with the FBI discussing his activities. But there was never any, and I looked, I never found any published article either confirming or denying that he actually had successfully executed those attacks. But subsequently, we were engaged by some folks in that space to add some security into the automotive space, or into those airframes.
Well, I tell you, if I was in charge of an airline or an automotive company and I had a solution like that, I would be PRing the hell out of it.
Well, I'm not sure that the airlines really want a lot of PR around the cybersecurity piece, but maybe they should. But yeah, they're certainly, the world has changed, as we said, since we talked last 5 years ago, and companies are starting to do a lot more in building security into their devices. We've still got a long ways to go, but but the tide has changed, and it's no longer a, well, why would I ever want to do that conversation? It's much more of a, okay, how do we find a solution and move forward with something? So, and, you know, the other thing, and, you know, as you said, Icon Labs had some big news as of 2 months ago, you know, as of May, Icon Labs is now part of Sigtigo.
Yeah, it was my next question.
All right. So, and that's relevant for to the discussion on not automotive, but the airline industry. So Sigtigo was actually formed from the there was a Komodo security group that provided the Komodo Certificate Authority solution and some endpoint software solutions, you know, antivirus for PCs and so on. The group sold off the Certificate Authority business to a private equity firm about 18 months ago, and that was rebranded subsequently as Komodo CA, or from Komodo CA rather, to Sigtigo. So Sigtigo is actually has deep, deep roots in the public certificate issuance business. So, you know, even today, if you are running a website or connect to a website and go look at the certificate, there's a decent chance that that certificate is from Komodo CA. They're really the largest issuer of public SSL certificates. So, you know, being owned by private equity, right, they were trying to figure out where to move forward. And they'd started to do some things in the certificate issuance business for IoT, right? So issuing certificates to OEMs to build into their devices. And that required some changes to their platform. And so they had some technology in that space. But offering certificates is really just the tip of the iceberg. It's a necessary piece. But those companies also need to, you know, to be able to do these other things we've been talking about, for securing their devices. Now, in the there's an Aeromax, I think, consortium. I think that's the name of the industry consortium that is defining some standards for communication between airlines or airplanes and control systems at airports. And Sigtigo is actually the co-root of that consortium. And, you know, companies are, you know, airports are implementing strong certificate-based authentication, mutual authentication for airplanes as they, you know, land and depart from airline or from airports, so that you've got, you know, protection of that communication, which is obviously a critical component. So there are things that are being done in that space that Sigtigo had been doing, you know, independent of what Icon Labs provides, but then we can come in and add additional value to those OEMs.
Okay. So that's good about Sigtigo. Let me start here. Have you ever heard of an organization called Global Platforms?
No, actually, I don't know that I have.
Okay. Don't worry about it. You're not alone. They've been around since the 1990s, and their specific focus, they're a standards organization. I did an interview with their technical director last week. They've been focused on essentially a minimal security standard for desktop and laptop computers and the components that go into them since the 1990s.
Okay.
Only three of the top 10 semiconductor companies in the world are members. ARM is, AMD is on lower levels. But that's one of the things I've found is that most people haven't heard of them, and yet they've been around forever. And there are some fairly significant names in them, but they've established for the worldwide standard for a basic minimum of security. And I'm just kind of surprised at how many companies haven't been involved with them. But they're following along with rules that have been in the EU since about the 1990s that require what they call a basic minimum security for electronic devices. And this predates the GDPR.
Right.
The problem is that the regulations have no enforcement to them. There's no penalties to them. So essentially, companies have ignored them all this time.
They've defined some standards, some best practices that people can take or leave at their own, right? That makes sense.
Are you looking into that, considering, you know, how big the GDPR is coming now?
So, so the specific consortium you mentioned, right, isn't one I'm familiar with, and I'm not sure how much they're doing in the IoT space.
Well, actually, the reason for the interview was that they are now transitioning to go beyond the desktop and go into IoT.
Okay, interesting. So, for my benefit, what was their name again?
Global Platforms, all one word, globalplatforms.org.
I believe in and support those efforts in general. We've done a lot of talking about the types of minimum security requirements that IoT devices should have, and so the more people we have, the more organizations we have supporting and pushing that, the better.
I've been able to let somebody know about it.
and we're certainly, there are other organizations that are, defining security standards. Cable Labs, for example, they manage several consortiums, and through that are defining security requirements for things like the SunSpec Alliance, which is for, solar equipment connecting to the grid in California, I think, is a very tightly defined alliance. So that would be the type of thing. There's the, I've got an email that just came across my desk, the IoT Security Foundation. There's a number of different organizations and groups that are either, generic industry consortiums, or very tightly focused industry consortiums for specific markets that are proposing and defining security requirements. And, there's probably dozens of them out there with different levels of adoption and frankly, probably different levels of success in the end, right? Some of them I think are going to be really successful and some may not. I think that the reality is that what we're going to end up is with regulation. And we've already started to see that with, you mentioned GDPR. There are some other UK legislations proposed around security for IoT devices. The state of California has defined some minimum security requirements for IoT devices. There's legislation, I don't know if it's passed or proposed, in Texas. Around security.
There are about a dozen states that either have passed legislation or are in the process of passing it along this line. That kind of brings me to my next level, because these technologies or these regulations essentially target the people who are collecting the data, not the technology that's being used to collect the data. And when you push comes to shove, we generally find out that the weaknesses in the data collectors are in the technology that they're using.
Goes back to my original thesis of you have to build it into the device.
Yeah.
The California legislation actually does target OEMs, right? It basically says if you're going to sell a device in California, it has to have these security capabilities built into it. And so we've seen some others and other proposed legislation that does go beyond just talking about data collection, data protection. Mm-hmm. And I think that's critical. The other thing that we've seen is some organizations, some very, very large organizations, mandating internal security standards, right? OEMs hiring a product safety officer, or, instead of just a CISO or CTO, they've got someone who's at that same level in the organization whose responsibility is product security. What do you build into the product for security? And so that sort of executive level mandate and focus within an OEM is really critical. And, I think that those OEMs are going to be ahead of the curve when legislation does start to get enacted, requiring certain levels of security within devices that are manufactured. Yes, there's a lot of interesting things happening. The tide has changed. Legislation is changing. But still a lot of work to be done in a lot of places where greater security needs to be built in. And wherever possible, if there's an industrial consortium that can, you know, if technologists can get ahead of the curve and try to solve the problem before legislators do, I think we'll have better solutions, right? I mean,
yeah.
These are sophisticated technical problems requiring technical solutions, and it's going to be difficult for legislation to really understand what needs to be done and do it as effectively.
Now that brings me to the latest legislation that's come out of the U.S. Congress. Legislating that's mandating manual controls within the nation's grid systems. And that's specifically to target the digitized systems that are have automated the electric grids that are vulnerable to attack. And we've already seen in other countries where, like, Russia has hacked into the Ukrainian grid system and put 250,000 people in the dark, and they couldn't bring it up again. So right. This legislation is mandating that there be manual analog controls where people can go in if their digital system has been taken down, and bring the system back up manually.
Well, that doesn't sound to me all that different than what we're seeing in a lot of manufacturing environments, where you've got safety critical systems that have to have manual override capability and things like that. So, having strong cyber defenses is critical. But, personally, having some of those capabilities doesn't seem unreasonable to me.
Last question. What started this whole conversation was the press release that your guy sent me about Silex. Tell me about Silex.
Okay, so, right, you've heard of the Dyn malware. You've heard of the Mirai botnet, right?
Right.
So these are attacks against IoT devices. And so we had another one, right? Not a big surprise, at least not to me. And I don't think this is going to be the last one that we have. So Silex is particularly nasty because it doesn't actually, it just bricks the device. It actually, once it's accessed the device and the malware is running on the device, it actually just goes out and sees what partitions are available on the hard drive and starts writing random data to the hard drive. And so at the end of that, you've got a device that won't boot anymore. So whether that's better or worse than, using your device to participate in a, DDoS, attack.
Yeah.
From the point of view of the device owner, it's probably worse because now I can't use my device. Before, you could probably still use your device, even though it was doing bad things. And the other thing that's particularly, depressing, I think, to read about that is it's just able to infect devices that have default telnet credentials. In other words, basically where there's really no security on the device whatsoever. So, we're talking, again, OEMs that haven't bothered to build in reasonable levels of security into these devices.
Now, is this similar to what the janitor did?
Maybe so. That was the one that actually did brick devices, right? Was basically saying that there's all these really, really bad devices out there, so I'm going to help the world out by bricking all these bad devices. It's similar to that.
Now, is that the purpose of these things? I can understand. I've written about hacks into Android devices and Linux devices, specifically targeting certain people so that they could capture their data. But this is this just seems like vandalism to me.
Yeah. So the janitor device, that was basically, the guy was a vigilante saying that, hey, cybersecurity is a problem and I'm going to fix it by just, genocide against bad devices, right? So that was the motivation with that one. I actually read an article on the Silex botnet that the guy saying that, well, I'm actually kind of sorry about this. I didn't really mean for this to get loose in the wild and do all this damage. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. So, I mean, I think, you know, the motivation you have to take case by case. And in general, right, people are creating these things to make money in one fashion or another.
But how would they do that? I mean, I can understand, you know, a ransomware device where they say, okay, I'm going to take control of this, and you're not going to get it back.
Right. Well, when I say make money or have some other specific malicious purpose, right? Some of the DDoS attacks, you know, you could DDoS somebody and then try to extract a ransom to make them stop.
Okay.
Or you just want to make a point that, hey, you know, this service has got a weakness and people want to point out a weakness. You know, people have crypto bots, right, where they'll take over a machine and use it to mine for cryptocurrency. So the motivation varies. It's generally somehow financial
just plain vandalism. Some kids get a hold of it and say, let's see what kind of damage we can do.
Well, or you look at what Russia did with Ukraine, and it's political, right? So there are different motivations for sure. You know, in this one, the author, according to the interview I saw, claimed that, you know, it was not malicious intent, that he didn't mean to let this happen. Whether that's honest or not, you know, your guess is as good as mine.
Okay. Well, I think that's it. This has been a great interview. Thank you, Alan.
All right, yeah, no problem. It's good to catch up.
Okay, that was Alan Grau, the CTO of the Icon Labs division of Sectigo, talking about certificates, botnets, the janitor, secure boots, and Silex, another botnet problem we've got out there in the world. So that's our show. Next week, we're going to have an interview with a gentleman by the name of Bill Weinberg, who is an old friend and colleague, and also is one of the world's authorities on open source software and the security of the IoT sector. So we'll be listening to some interesting stuff from Bill. Tune in next week. And after that, we're going to be getting into the area of ethics and whether or not we can create an ethical AI. And that will be with our old friend, Ashok Babar of Axie Auto Corporation. As always, if you're interested in helping support this program, you can click on the button on the anchor.fm page for our website, and you can make donations. In the meantime, check out anchor.fm. This has been Crucial Tech, a Footwasher Media production.